this episode of the Sailing Road Podcast, we feature part two of our interview with Ken and Carol Gilstrom of Voyager Sailing. We hear about their unique sailing trips in Alaska and some of their personal cruising adventures. We'll cover the sailing news, and our product of the week is a fan that will keep the air moving in your cabin. All that and more on the Sailing Road. Welcome to The Sailing Road, the podcast about everything sailing, from coastal and lake cruising to global offshore cruising. My name is Steve Paymet, and I am joined by the admiral of our fleet, my beautiful girlfriend, Brandi Bryant.
Hey everybody, what's going on?
You are the admiral.
Yeah, that means I can overrule you anytime I want.
That's right. So we are, it's the weekend or the week before Thanksgiving, and we're gearing up for the Thanksgiving holiday, which
so
means...
So excited.
Yeah, short week at work and
get to eat lots of food.
Big feast.
So it's my favorite.
We're getting lots of extra workouts in, trying to prep for the big feast. Mm-hmm. Eating right all week so that we can feast at the end of the week. So we're looking forward to that. And it got me thinking about what I'm thankful for this year. And I am very thankful that I have such a great sailing partner to go sailing with me and somebody that is willing to do this crazy podcast with me.
Oh, I'm thankful for you too, babe. Make life easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it's good to have somebody sharing your similar interests and being along for the ride.
Yeah.
And I'm also thankful that we made it to episode number 10.
Woohoo!
You get so mad at me. Brandi is always mad at me because I never say what the episode number is.
And well, we listen to all these other podcasts and all of them start off with, this is episode 457.
Oh, we're not like all the other podcasts.
You're absolutely right. And we do not have to say it.
I'm not going to say what episode it is.
But we're going to every 10 get excited.
Yeah. On the big anniversaries, probably the next one will be 25 maybe or 50.
Isn't that the silver anniversary?
Yeah, 25.
Right, we can do it that way.
Well, yeah, you think about
do
it.
Do I get gifts when we hit those?
Well, we can do shared sailing. It has to be sailing related, though.
Gifts on those podcasts?
Sure.
Okay, we can do that.
But you think about it, like The Simpsons, they've been on the air for 15 years. They don't come on at the beginning of the episode and say, episode number 385
That's
of
The Simpsons.
That's because
probably back when Simpsons started, they didn't have people saying episode blah, blah, blah.
Nobody says that. Well, on TV. So we're not
going to
say
it. Need to tell them.
And just, I had to look it up. The Simpsons, as of over the weekend, November 22nd or whatever, it was their 580th episode. So they're...
Wow. How long will it take for us to get to 580?
At least 15 years.
We got this.
They probably had a few Christmas specials and other things in there too. So we'd probably take a little bit longer. But so we're starting the Christmas shopping season, and I'm putting together my Christmas shopping list.
Yes, Steve has to give me a shopping list. Why is that, babe?
Because I buy everything that I want when I see it.
He sees it, he buys it. Therefore, I have nothing to buy when it comes to Christmas time. So Steve hands me a list, and I have to pretty much go with that list because you can't buy somebody who has everything something. So,
and that's the thing. I don't buy a lot of like big extravagant things. I just buy a lot of small junk that adds up to probably a lot of money. If I looked at, I don't ever want to look at my Amazon shopping list for the year.
Well, and you're pretty picky, so at least that's if true. I have your list, I know what you're gonna like it.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, it's your fault.
And I'd probably give you a list of 50 items, and then you can... I'm surprised at whatever you pick off there, because there's so many things on it. So we're starting that. And actually, that reminds me, we need help from the listeners, because on one of the next shows, either the next show or the one after...
Probably the following.
Yeah, we're going to do a holiday gift guide. So we'd really love to hear from the listeners on things you like and, you know, sailing related that you
or
think...
Or things you want.
Yeah, or things that are on your list. And then we will put those on the holiday gift guide and put it on the show. And then when we stack all these up, you may hear of other items that you never even thought of. And then you can just have your significant other listen to this podcast and say, buy anything that they say on here and I'd be happy. So we're working on that. And I think we mentioned in the last show, A couple people did have sent us emails, and I started an area of the Amazon store that is listener recommendations. So on our Amazon store, you'll now see a section that has a couple items that have been recommended by our listeners. And it's great because they're items I never even thought of. There's some really interesting stuff on there. And I think we mentioned before on the podcast, the last podcast, that the St. Petersburg Boat Show is coming up in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's the first weekend, December 4th through the 6th. We are going to be there. We're going to be staying on our boat all weekend
at the boat show. I'm getting palmy hands as we talk about it.
And because we are going to be speaking in the seminar series. So on Saturday, December 5th at 2:15 p.m., we're going to be speaking. And we're going to talk about our adventures exploring the Florida cruising grounds, all the different areas of Florida, and some of the benefits of having a trailerable boat to cruise in. So coming out, we'd love to meet you. There's a cruising outpost party on Saturday night right after the show. As long as you're in the show before it closes, you can go to that. Meet up with Bob Bitchin and his whole crew. And
what his name?
he's a motorcycle dude that went sailing. So he's got to have a name like that. So we've got that coming up. We're really excited about it, and we'd love to meet up with the listeners. So please send us an email or contact us on Facebook. Tell us if you're coming out, and we'll figure out a time to meet up either at the party or some other time and chat. So we'd really love to see you out there. And then I also want to mention we talked about in the last podcast, the Learn to Sail audio lessons that Franz at the Sailing the Mediterranean podcast put together. And we've just found it to be a really good program. Brandy's been learning a lot of the basic sailboat terms, and I've been learning a number of things out of it. And so Franz, after talking to him about it, set us up as an affiliate seller of these lessons. We bought the lessons when we bought them, and we really got a lot of great use out of them. And we're just on the first set. The ASA 101 basic keelboat certification is what we're going through right now. And these lessons, they're just audio lessons, so they can really help you pass the written part of the ASA sailing courses. And then you still need to go on the water to pass the sailing part. But they're just really, they're fun to listen to in the car. Franz tells a lot of good stories from his sailing experience that really just put some meat behind the lessons. And so he's got three different courses that he's written so far. He's got the ASA 101 Basic Keelboat Certification. It's 16 lessons and over 7 hours of material. And then he has the ASA 103 Basic Coastal Cruising, and that's 19 lessons over 9 hours. And then the last one is the ASA 104 Bare Boat Cruising Certification, and that's 23 lessons over 8 hours. So just a tremendous amount of material. So you'll see in the show notes, we have a link to his lessons. And if you use our link, then we get a couple bucks to put in our cruising kitty, which is very nice
really
of Franz.
Cool, because we just throw them on while we're in the car and listen to them instead of playing music or whatever, and just gives that extra feedback in the ear. And Steve loves to quiz me, so yeah, I think they're pretty cool. They help out.
They're working out. So definitely look for that link, and we really appreciate Franz giving us the opportunity to be an affiliate seller of those lessons. So now we're going to go into the interview, and this week we are featuring part two of the interview that we did with Ken and Carol Gilstrom of Voyager Sailing. And in this part of the interview, we talk with Ken and Carol about the great training that they do on their boat up in Alaska. They do these two-week cruises that are just all-encompassing, learn what it's like to work on a cruising boat, offshore, inshore, anchoring, everything. And we also, in this interview, hear about a really scary experience they had when they lost their rudder a couple hundred miles offshore and how they dealt with that. Just a great story. What just really surprised us as we were talking. We didn't expect to hear that story, and it was really interesting. So here's the interview. So I know at some point you decided to do the sail training. Was the boat done? And then you said, hey, we're going to do some cruising, but then it turned into sail training. What came first, the end of the boat, the sail training, the cruising?
Well, halfway through building the boat, or two-thirds of the way through building the boat, Carol and I were taking sailing courses. Carol was taking the courses mainly, and I took the courses with her to kind of see what it was all about, because I had never taken a course in my life, and it was kind of cool learning the real terms for things. Mm-hmm. When she was taking these courses, I was going along with her. I started mentoring at the college and providing some assistance to other sailors. And then the college asked me if I wanted to become an instructor. So they paid for all my certifications, and I taught for the college, as I said, part-time the first couple of years. And then it went into teaching about 6 weeks of the year. So I'd go down to the Caribbean and teach 2 weeks, and then 4 weeks on Lake Ontario. That really kind of sold me on, geez, I could continue this on our boat. So, you know, 3-4 years before completing the boat, we started saying this is what we could be doing on the boat. Our whole goal was to share the experience with other people. And what better way to share it than having them come sail with you and do sail training, but they're experiencing the whole adventure too.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more. After I looked at your website on some of the training that you do, I was really intrigued by it, because these aren't short, you know, couple-day trips. It looked like they're, you know, anywhere from 10 to 14 days, and through some of the most amazing cruising grounds in the world, especially in the Northwest. So tell us a little bit about how you put together your training and the length of them and the scope and the cost.
Yeah, the length of the courses, most sailing schools are offering the 3-4 day liveaboard intermediate and advanced courses. Maybe they go to a week long course. We were looking to share the experience a lot more, and that usually involves more time on the boat. Generally, a lot of our clients are people that want to do this same type of cruising, extended cruising, and a short period of time on the boat really isn't giving them a full feel for the cruising lifestyle and how to experience it. The other thing is the areas that we go to, 3 or 4 days doesn't do those areas any justice. And when we were planning last summer's trips up through Alaska, 2 weeks wasn't even doing them justice. So last summer, our courses were actually 3 weeks long. And it was really the shortest period of time to experience the West Coast, the Northwest. And it worked really well. And the 2 week to next summer, our courses are 2 week long, and the people really get a feel for the cruising lifestyle through those 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
And are your typical students people that have been maybe through a basic class, sailing class, and they're just looking to gain a more advanced cruising, or what's the scope of types of students?
Yeah, we aim our courses at people that have already done their basic and are looking to build on those skills. So that we do the Sail Canada intermediate cruising and advanced cruising courses. So people that have had the basic, they know that they love the whole sport and want to go further with it, further in the cruising, and want to expand their horizons a little bit more.
So talk a little bit about the cost of the trips. I thought it was really reasonable for the amount of time that you're on the boat and the experience you're getting.
Yeah, last summer the cost was $5,000, but it was the courses were 21 days, and it's reasonable, probably cheaper than any other buddy that's offering that type of thing. And we're limiting the number of students on the boat to 4 on any one course. The losing my train of thought here.
That's all right. I guess what's the time now and the cost? Because you said last year it was 21 days.
Yeah. So this coming summer, we are not going up as far as Alaska. We were actually planning on starting to do some very extended sailing again, but we decided to spend another summer in the Vancouver area. So this coming summer, we're offering 2-week-long courses. We're going up to up as far as Prince Rupert and out to Haraguay, and spending a little time in the areas that we skipped by last summer. So the courses are 2-week-long, and they are about $3,800 to $4,000 for the 2 weeks.
That's great. And does that cover everything while you're on the boat?
Yeah, it's everything while you're on the boat, and the only thing it's not covering is your ground and air transportation. So you've got to come to where we are. And that was one of the things when we were setting up our courses, is a lot of them start in one location and finish in a different location. So the travel logistics are up to the student to sort out.
Right. So you mentioned that you're thinking about going out cruising again. I was curious about what's your cruising background that you did before you settled and started doing the sail training.
We left Ontario June 2012, and when we left, we were actually training right from the day we left. We went out to the east coast of Canada, and then, after spending some time in Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, we went down to Chesapeake Bay. We were in Chesapeake Bay for about a month and then made our way to the Caribbean. Spent the first winter in the Caribbean and then headed across the Atlantic. We went to Bermuda, Azores, and then Wales, England, Scotland, Portugal, Madeira, Canary Islands, Cabo Verde, and then back to the Caribbean.
And all the way through those courses or that trek, we did have students join us here and there.
Oh, okay.
So we've been doing a lot of teaching as we went to all those locations.
Our long passages, ocean crossings, we offer those to past students. And a number of people are looking at doing some extended voyaging, don't have much of an opportunity to do an ocean passage before they get on their own boat. So when we were crossing the Atlantic both ways and going from Panama to Galapagos, we offered those as somewhat courses, but it was more getting experience. And those were offered to past students, so we weren't taking any new people on for those. We approached students that we had that took courses with us in the past and said, we're doing these crossings. And we actually had a number of past students join us on those crossings.
Yeah, I would imagine on a over 20-day passage, you want to make sure that it's somebody you like. At least maybe in Alaska, there's areas that you find a city to drop somebody off in if they were really driving, you know. But when you're offshore, there's not a whole lot of places to put them.
No, and it's interesting. People say, well, you know, what do you do when somebody gets out of hand or you can't stand them? And out of all the people we've had on the boat, we've never had a problem that way. And the nice thing is that everybody has different personalities on the boat, but they are on the boat for one particular reason, and that's to build sailing skills. So you can see at times people getting on other people's nerves, but if you can, well, you can easily redirect the focus and get them back into the sailing mode, and everybody has one goal in mind. So that helps keep everybody on track.
Right. So tell us a little bit about cruising in Alaska. I've read some blogs about it, and there's, you know, some unique challenges with currents and deadhead logs and all kinds of things. So tell us a little bit about the uniqueness and navigation challenges that you've experienced in Alaska.
Alaska was pretty straightforward.
It was easy. Alaska's a piece of cake. You just gotta like cool weather.
The biggest challenge in Alaska was the cold, which we were prepared for. The boat has got central heating in it. There are much greater challenges other places of the world. As far as logs go, the worst place we've been for logs is actually just off of Vancouver here in the Strait of Georgia. I would not want to night sail in the Strait of Georgia. There's that many stray logs. But once we got up in the Alaska area, we really weren't coming across any deadheads, logs, anything like that.
The beauty of Alaska is, well, Glacier Bay, the mountains, the rockiness, the shores, the wildlife. I mean, that's the enticing part of Alaska, is that you don't go a day without seeing a humpback diving out of the water and landing. Mm. And you can catch them on film as good as National Geographic. You know, it is a sensational location. And to be able to sail through bergy bits up to massive glaciers and hear the roar of the ice cracking and the sheets falling into the water is breathtaking. It's just phenomenal. So more than the challenge of Alaska, it was the beauty and the beauty of nature.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's definitely a place that Steve and I have constantly spoke about and just in awe of how beautiful the scenery is.
It really was amazing up there. My one thing that I was expecting, I was actually expecting it to be more remote. Mm-hmm. And I know geographically it's very remote, but geez, there was always another boat near you. There's a lot of fishing going on, but there's a lot of, you know, you'd pull into a bay and you would think you were in the middle of nowhere and turn the corner and there's a fishing camp and it has, you know, 10 small fishing boats and all these guys are going out. So because the waters are so protected in that area, there is a lot of, I guess, tourism,
right,
a lot of fishing. And we were always, there was never a point where we thought, geez, we're the only people out here. Whereas we had moments when we were cruising Newfoundland, we knew we were the only people out there for, you know, 100 miles. And the same with the north end of Scotland, we knew that we were the only people around. And we actually enjoy that remoteness and didn't get that same feeling in Alaska. But the scenery and the stuff to do and the people in Alaska were all so welcoming, yeah, and amazing. We had, yeah, a blast. It was
Glacier
great.
Glacier Bay is just so beautiful. I mean, it's well maintained. I don't mean the Glacier Bay itself, but it's a national park, I guess.
Yeah.
And they have a fantastic staff of knowledgeable people who tell you have time to answer any of your questions about the wildlife and about the history of the glaciers and the First Nations people and you know what happened to them in the days, you know, in the 1800s, 1700s and all of that. So, you know, kudos to Glacier Bay National Park there. It's a fabulous thing. But again, we enjoy that. We enjoy learning, but we also enjoy being remote. And for the remoteness, you know, you're not going to find it at Glacier Bay. You have a cruise ship behind you and in front of you, and you're going to talk. You go and see this little island and whatever. But don't get me wrong, it's beautiful.
Wow. Yeah, it's definitely the whole Northwest. I grew up, my grandparents lived in Portland, and so I spent my youth summers camping with them, Mount Hood and all the Pacific Northwest there. I just love it, love the area.
Yeah,
so we've talked
it's
about our cruising plans, and it's not easy to get there. You know, going up the West Coast, going from Hawaii, it's just a long haul. So I've said at some point, likely what we would do is
you know, drive out there. We always thought taking an RV across the country anyway. RV across the country, end up there somewhere, buy a boat, cruise around, sell the boat, and then go somewhere else to sail the rest. Because it's just such a hard haul to get up there.
Yeah, it is tough, and that's a great idea to do it that way. When we came through the Panama Canal, we were planning on coming up to the West Coast, Vancouver area, and you look at the two alternatives, 4,000 miles, I guess, up the West Coast of the U.S., or Galapagos, Hawaii, and back in, and that's 10,000 miles, You have to take the 10,000 mile route if you want it to be an easy passage. But the best passage we've ever had was 34 days going from Galapagos to Hawaii. It was just amazing. The wind was right. The sun was out every day. And the boat just kept going for 34 days until we got to Hawaii. It was amazing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it just seems like such a long time, but when everything's going well, you're relaxed, you're happy, you're just, you know, taking it easy and enjoying the ride.
Absolutely, and that was our best passage ever. It was just so nice. Everything went right, which is different than some of the other passages we've had. So
well, that brings me to my next question is we'd love to hear a couple of your best and also your worst experiences while cruising. And then along those lines, people always, some reason, always love to hear some unique problem, something that broke and you figured out a way to jury-rig it and fix it to keep going.
Well, the best is no one particular point, time. The best is actually just being on the water and doing what we want to do. So there's really no one best. It can be difficult to pull yourself away from an area. You get to wherever, and it's just gorgeous, and you're having a good time, and you think you could stay there forever. Then you say, well, we've got to pull ourselves away. And what helps in pulling yourself away is that you know the next place you're going to go to is going to be just as amazing. So whenever we land at a spot, Carol, her famous saying is,
"This is the most beautiful place we've ever been."
and I've heard that over 20 times.
It's funny because then he says, "There you go again." And it makes me think, oh, yeah, I have said that. I did say that last time. That every place is so special, and we have the opportunity to do this around the world. What is more exciting than that?
Absolutely. So any unique problems that came up during the cruising that you were able to solve?
Yeah. I guess the most dramatic one is on our passage from Norfolk, Virginia to St. Martin. We left Norfolk with a very particular weather window in mid-November. And we just got through the Gulf Stream. We were about 200 miles out. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I was off watch sleeping. And Carol wakes me up and tells me that we have no steerage.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah, oh, gosh. Well, you're wrong, Carol. We have to have steerage, so give me the wheel, you know? What do you know about steering?
You're just
about
sleep deprived. The steering wheel works fine.
So I take the wheel, and yeah, I'm turning it both. You're right, Carol. Gee whiz. We're got no steerage. So tracing the problem and trying to figure it out, and then actually hanging over the back of the boat and looking down and saying, yeah, the rudder is there, but it's just swinging wildly back and forth. So we are 200 miles out and have no steerage on the boat, and it's not something we could fix easily.
And I couldn't remember, you have a wind vane on the boat? Any kind of
steering vane? No.
Okay.
At that time, we hand steered the entire way.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Not even autopilot, huh?
No autopilot.
No, we only put the autopilot on at, after doing 18,000 miles.
Wow. So, you guys are diehard.
Well, the boat is nicely balanced.
True.
And will hold a course pretty nicely.
Providing it's got a rudder.
Well,
that helps.
So even without the rudder.
Actually, yeah.
So we had this problem, and it was little bit of a discussion first. Carol and I, well, Carol really wanted to just call for help and get somebody to come out and
assist us. I think the thing was that there was no steerage, and I put it in perspective. Here we are, 200 miles from one shore and about 800 miles to Bermuda.
Before we get...
And that was the big issue. I think we should go back. So maybe we could call someone and we can go back to fix it. But...
Well, we had weather closing in behind us, and we had got out of Norfolk in time to beat the weather. I was planning on trying to keep the boat going towards Bermuda because I knew in a day or two we'd have calm weather and I'd be able to go over the back of the boat and really assess the problem and try to jury-rig something to gain steerage. Carol would have no doing with that.
Well, I was worried about him because... he would have to go off and jury-rig and hold the rudder to the boat. We had huge seas.
Well, we were going to be calm in a couple of days.
Yeah, but at that time...
in the moment.
Yeah, you're still trying to win this argument, Ken. This argument is not to be won, Ken. It's over. You've lost, evidently.
Well, the first thing was to really decide what was really important at the time. And it was, okay, so... what is the main thing here? The boat is floating.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough food on the boat for a month. We have enough water on the boat probably for 2 months. So there's no real survival issues there. So we could drift for a month or two and not really worry about a whole lot. So once we got that in our minds to say, okay, it's not life-threatening right now. Now we can make a plan. And we discussed the plan for maybe 4 hours and decided that, yeah, the better way to go was to go back to Chesapeake Bay. But that was going into the storm that we were trying to avoid. And it was going back through the Gulf Stream. And it was having a north wind of 30, 35 knots blowing over the northbound current. So it wasn't going to be a very pleasant ride back.
So how did you steer back through the storm?
Well, it took us another 4 hours to get the boat turned around just by playing with the sails and trying to get it backwinded. But it took 4 hours to turn the boat and get the boat pointed somewhere towards the east coast of the United States. So it was, we were off Cape Hatteras, and so now we're pointed in the right direction. Balancing the sails, we could gain fairly good steerage and at least point in somewhat the direction we wanted to go. However, we had this storm and the Gulf Stream to cross through, and we went through it. We had two breaking waves engulf the boat. They had to be 20, 25 foot high breaking. The entire cockpit of the boat filled up with water. I remember the Dodger was completely underwater at one point in time. Just crazy. But we were able to bring the boat all the way back to the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, we didn't feel comfortable trying to bring the boat into Chesapeake Bay through the shipping traffic that's coming through the channel there. So we called for a tow, and the tow guy, forgot what company it was, but suggested that we do bring the boat into the bay. We said, well, what about all the shipping traffic? And he said, well, I'll just call the pilot station and they'll stop all the shipping traffic for you. And I said, really? But anyway, it wasn't just the shipping traffic. There's a lot of navigational buoys through there. And we can kind of control a boat with the sails, but we can't make sharp turns. And we don't want to run into a navigation aid. That would ruin our day. So we anchored and had the tow guy come out just to, I guess we were just anchored in front of Virginia Beach, and they came out and towed us in the morning. But it was deciding what was really important. So we were going to survive. We had lots of food and we could drift for whatever length of time. But then just coming up with the tenacity to try to steer the boat back. And we had to try to tack the boat three or four times, well, more than that over. It took us 2 days to get back the 200 miles. So we were actually making pretty good time. And the tacking the boat was absolutely crazy. We'd be, you know, making our way towards shore. There's nowhere along between Cape Hatteras and the entrance to Chesapeake Bay. There is nowhere to bring a boat in. So the only option was to take it into the bay. But it was a grueling 2 days.
And we've had very little sleep. We took the Gatorade up and had crackers, and we stayed on up in the cockpit because at any point we had to try to tack the boat to avoid a buoy or a ship or something. And it was crazy. It was so good to see the tow company take our bow and start pointing us in safe harbor.
Right, it had to be. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. I think it speaks to your sailing skill. I think a lot of people would have just called and said, "We can't get this boat back. We're going to have to get lifted off of it."
But, well, that's what everybody else that we've come across or heard about. They've left their boats out there. So we felt really good that we sailed it back in.
Well, it shows it can be done too.
Absolutely. And it certainly can be done. I mean, we brought it right to the mouth of the Chesapeake. The tow operator, and this is where the story got really good, is the tow operator called the marina that he is going to tow us into. When we arrived at the marina, they had the travel lift ready for us. The marina had called an aluminum boat manufacturer, and their foreman was on the dock waiting. When we were coming through the Gulf Stream, the rudder was torn off the back of the boat. Ooh. It was just so violent what we were coming through, and we kind of knew that was going to happen. And it was sad when we saw the rudder get ripped off. We heard the big clunk clunk, and then it floated away, and just thought, oh, it went from a repair to needing a new rudder now. And I didn't know how long that was going to take. But so the foreman from the metal boat company was on the dock. He looked at it. He says, yep, that's not a problem. We can get that replaced for you fairly quickly. He says, who designed the boat? I said, it was Ted Brewer. He says, oh, man. He says, the owner of the company is best buddies with Ted Brewer. Mm-hmm. So they got together and figured out what the issue was, and it was a bit of an engineering issue. And going back to when we were building the boat, we kind of noticed that it was a bit of an engineering issue and weren't going to build the rudder that way. And then we finally talked ourselves into, well, they designed it that way. That's got to be the right way. And hindsight now, it was the wrong way.
So it turned out to be the actual shape of the rudder that caused the fatigue?
Well, no, it was the connection. Oh, okay. It was the connection, and it was just the way it was all put together, engineered, and whatnot. But they worked it out, and the metal boat manufacturer had us back in the water in 1 week. And that was incredible because 4 of those days of that 1 week were the American Thanksgiving weekend.
Wow.
So they worked through the Thanksgiving weekend to get us back in the water. And his bill, I think, for all the labor and material was about $3,000. And that was just incredible.
That's fantastic. So now when you do sail training, do you just let the wheel go loose and teach people how to sail without using the rudder?
We've always done that.
Okay.
Even when I was teaching on the college boats, we would practice that to get the sails balanced so you can control the boat and you know, getting the main powered up and maybe the jib depowered and being able to turn the boat up into the wind and doing the opposite to turn away from the wind. But we had pretty good control of the boat that we could sail 200 miles to the point that we wanted to come back to. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Sorry,
real quick, that sailing period that you just spoke of when the rudder, you know, broke, was it just you and your wife on the boat at the time? No students?
Yes, it was just Carol and I on the boat at the time, which was the best way to have it.
Absolutely. Well, people would definitely learn a lot that day, that week too.
That's right. That's right.
Well, when I asked you for a unique sailing problem, I never realized we'd get such a great story. That's fantastic. I mean, it's sorry to hear that you had to go through that. We know, living on the East Coast, what it's like to go through the, or we've read, we haven't done it yet, going through the Gulf Stream and taking that on, especially going into seas that you knew were going to be rough. It just, it speaks to how harrowing that had to be and what an experience to have to go through it. So we're glad that it went well and you were able to get back.
It was interesting because when we were coming back and getting these breaking waves, you always felt like you should steer the boat and you would subconsciously just go to the wheel and you'd say, oh, why am I standing at the wheel? I can't do anything, right? So
mentally, it made you feel better.
Yeah, well, it kind of did, but we would just be sitting in the cockpit under the Dodger
waiting it out,
kind of just going in the right direction of somewhat. But when we made the decision to go back, I had said to Carol, well, we're going to go back through this storm and everything, so we have to be prepared to know that we're going to lose the rudder, and we did. So we knew it would be a new rudder.
Right.
But it was quite the experience, and we actually, I think it was that year we were in St. Lucia, and we were talking to another gentleman, and he had just abandoned his boat coming across from the other way, from Cabo Verde to St. Lucia, and he had abandoned his boat and got onto a ship for a similar problem. He lost his rudder, or the rudder got damaged, and he just says, well, we abandoned the boat. And I didn't have the heart to tell him that, yeah, well, we just sailed ours back. So,
right. Yeah. You don't hear that very often. So it's great to hear that kind of story, that it is possible. They often say the boat's tougher than the people, and you guys proved that you're just as tough as the boat.
Well, we know the boat is tougher than us. but if you can keep that in your mind, that generally people that abandon their boats, the boat washes up on some shore somewhere and is intact. So the safest place to be is on your boat in most cases.
Right.
I think the issue, though, is that a lot of people don't have the tenacity, because usually in a situation like that, you are vulnerable. Your stress level is high. You have to make really good decisions. And sometimes you're just not able to get away from all that stress and make clear-headed decisions. And that is something that Ken actually has in his character. And as a sailor, I am learning. And also, if anyone embarks on this type of venture, that's one area of their education that they need to delve into, how to work well under stress, because it was because of Ken's decision that we could actually steer the boat back, even though he didn't like my decision of steering the boat back. He knew that we could, it should work, and he was tenacious. I mean, he was hanging off the end of the boat, trying to do things, always strapped on, but I mean, we were backwinding the foresail. We were pulling the foresail down. We were pulling it up. And I just was so worried about him, and I wasn't thinking clearly, but I knew he knew it should work. So if he knew it should work, we were going to do this, and we just kept trying and trying and trying until we got the boat tacked, and then we would think, okay, how did we do that again?
Yeah, we it would take us probably, we had to figure an hour to 2 hours to tack the boat. And once we completed the tack, we were so tired, we couldn't figure out what did we just do to complete that tack. And it was only when we got to our second to last tack before getting to the mouth of the Chesapeake where I had tried something very unique and different, and that meant we could switch tacks in 2 minutes. And what I ended up doing was we're sailing along. I turned the engine on, luffed the sails, put the engine put it into reverse, which would force the bow to blow downwind, and the stern would go up into the wind. It didn't matter what direction we were pointing, but when we slowed the boat down with the rudder or with the engine in reverse, the boat naturally just blew off the wind. So now we were on a straight downwind. We would pull the mainsail from port or whatever side to the other side of the boat, and we just did a real beautiful jibe and turn the engine off and scoot around. So we would do a 360 every time. Well, it was the second to last one where we actually figured that out. It was so easy to do.
But, well, now you know for now all know. The rest of your sailing days.
For the next time, right.
And everybody that listens to this.
Never be next time.
Everybody that listens to this just learned a great lesson from you that they will, after this happens, they'll know to try the engine trick.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, we're going to start wrapping up here, but a couple things I wanted to point out to the listeners. When I was on your website, which has a lot of great material, shows all your trips, but I also saw you have a whole section of video content there, and I think it really shows what kind of teacher you are, because they're very well put together videos doing things like man overboard drills, how to get off a dock when wind's blowing against you, things that people commonly will experience. But I think it also just gives a taste of your nature and the way you are as a teacher, which I really found appealing. So I definitely recommend people to go out there and look at those videos.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have our friend Mike White does a lot of video for us in exchange for free sailing. So.
That works out well.
Yeah, it works out well, and he does a real good job on it, and we're happy with him, and we would like to do more videos. It's just getting the time to get them all put together, but yeah, thank you.
And then I saw you do some seminars at the boat show, so we've got Vancouver Boat Show and Toronto Boat Show coming up in January. Tell us a little bit about the kind of seminars you do.
So the boat show seminars are pretty cool. They're only 45 minutes long, so whatever topic we're doing has to be pretty concise, sort of an overview of things. But I do a big range on boating-related topics, destinations. I do one on the Galapagos, one on transiting the Panama Canal. One of the most popular ones that I've done for probably 5-6 years now is reducing the anxiety in boating, and that one's always filled.
Yeah, I imagine.
I just tapped myself on the chest and said, "That's one I need."
Everybody brings their partner.
That's fairly typical of what's happening. People coming in, quite often it's couples, and one of the partners is anxious on the boat, and you know, we go through that anxiety is actually probably a good thing. It's just controlling it. The other ones I've added to this year that I still have to finish putting together, but one is called Galley Antics, and I'm trying to put together video, and we tried to videotape a number of situations in the galley while underway, and you know, things flying across the galley mid cooking, and just what it is like to work in the galley in a storm. And Carol and I, we love to cook, but even better, we love good food, and we do not reduce what we eat when we go on a long passage or if we're in a storm. If we're in a storm, we still want to have a roast chicken dinner on whatever night it is. So we have a galley that's set up right and works well in all conditions. Long passages, one of the highlights of your day, or the highlights of your day on a long passage, is the meals. You prefer it be that way, and not if the meal is not the highlight, that means something went wrong, mm-hmm. and you've got problems. But the meal is a highlight of the day, and we like to eat well. So anyway, the seminar on galley antics is related to that. And another one I added this year too is head aches and all the issues that happen in the head. right from, you know, we get a lot of people on the boat that aren't too sure about the head, and they'll go in and you can hear them playing with the switches and pumps and things, and you know they're getting it wrong, and next thing you know they put something down the head that they shouldn't have, and then you're cutting pipes up trying to get these things out, and you find all kinds of unique things that they were explicitly told not to put in the head, and then all the other issues. So yeah, there's a couple of kind of entertaining seminars that I've added this year too, so it's a lot of fun.
Great. Well, we'll watch when you get the schedule set. We'll definitely put a notice out to all the listeners, so if they live in those areas they can stop by and join. And then we want to get some of your contact info. I'll definitely put all the your website and everything in the show notes, but tell any other services that you offer. Just give a brief kind of commercial on other things you do besides the sail training we talked about.
The sail training on our boat is a big part of what we do. While we're in Vancouver, throughout the winter, we're not moving our boat anywhere because Carol is actually teaching dance in Vancouver while we're here, so I can't take the boat out and teach on it. But I am teaching on other people's boats in Vancouver, so a lot of people are looking to build some skills, and it's actually working pretty nice when you can get an instructor on your boat that will go through your boat and not really find things that are wrong, but help you improve safety on your boat and come up with ideas on how your boat can sail possibly better, and then learning the man overboards, how your boat reacts in all kinds of situations on your particular boat. So that's been actually fairly popular last winter while we were here, and we'll do that again this winter.
Sounds great. Well, we really appreciate you all spending the time with us, and just it's been a very enjoyable conversation. The stories were great, the information was great, so I know all our listeners will really like it, and we'll definitely stay in touch. I'm sure there's other topics we can come up and talk about soon, and hopefully if you guys get out cruising again, we'll get an update on where you're cruising.
Super. Thanks, Thank Steve. You. Brandy.
Thanks, guys. It's been great.
Great talking to you.
So it was a lot of fun talking with Ken and Carol, and that story of them losing the rudder, it's the kind of adventure that no one wants to experience. But
that story of them losing the rudder, let me just tell you that is what makes me realize I have a lot to learn. Because that scares the patootie out of me. You know, if that happens, you know, sailing, everybody has the blue water, the sunsets, the sundowners, you know, it's going to be a relaxing day in their head, but crap like that happens and you need to be prepared. So we haven't dealt with anything that would even come close to being like that story. So that just reminds me of how much I really do have to learn before we set sail and take on big water.
Yeah. And you just have to go through those exercises. And I think it's one of the things that helps taking instruction from somebody like Ken and Carol that's had those experiences and can take you through some drills and things to think about and a list of things that you should practice before you go offshore so that you would know how to deal with them. So that if something like that happens, you lose a rudder and you say, well, it's not the end of the world. We don't have to leave our boat behind, which is what a lot of people do.
Yeah, what a jump ship.
Yeah, a lot of people just say, well, we lost the rudder. We can't steer the boat now. We've got to call the Coast Guard and get pulled off. And they didn't do that.
I would have been, can I phone a friend? Ken and Carol, what do I do?
And the fact was, they weren't even sure what to do.
at that point. Yeah, a 4-hour conversation to figure it out. It's definitely not something you...
And they had to play with the boat to see, hey, can we steer this thing? And they, you know, with trial and error, they figured out different ways. It took them to the last tack to figure out the best way to do it. But now they know. Now they can teach other people as they go through that. So if you're interested, I'm going to put in the show notes the link to their sailing instruction. And they do these just great Alaskan cruises, 2 weeks over the summer in Alaska. But they do sail training year-round out of Vancouver. And they'll do it on someone's boat or their own boat. So definitely get in contact with them. And I think they'd just be a great resource in your sail training if you're out on the West Coast.
I think we need to get in contact and do it.
We'll work on that. I think that's probably a good idea. A trip to Vancouver and go sailing for a couple weeks. I'd love that. To sail up in Alaska. So up next, we are going to cover the sailing news. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and we are going to cover our sailing news for the week. And this first story that I found, I just really love this story, and I'm surprised I haven't heard about it before now. It is about a traditional double-hulled canoe from Hawaii. It's a 62-foot double-hulled canoe called Hokulea, and this canoe was built in the 70s, like 1979, and the reason they built it is they realized in Hawaii that they were losing their tradition of sailing with this traditional vessels, and especially losing their tradition of the navigating that the traditional Hawaiians had used. So they built this 62-foot catamaran canoe, and they started putting together this program, and their one of their first big sails, they took it to Tahiti. One of the problems was that there was no one in Hawaii that could navigate by the traditional method that Hawaiians had. It had been totally lost in Hawaii. So they went and found somebody at a nearby island, another island that they had still kept up their tradition, had been taught by his elders. And now they're doing these long voyages. The first one they did to Tahiti, and then they came back to Hawaii. And now, this so many years later, the biggest one that they've gone on, they took off from Hawaii earlier this year, and they've sailed all the way to Cape Town, South Africa, where they arrived last week. So they're going to keep going, essentially doing a circumnavigation, and they're planning, I think by the time that they're done, they will have sailed more than 60,000 nautical miles and dropped anchor in over 100 ports in 27 nations. What I really thought was cool about this story, after I read it, I started getting on their website and reading more about the Hawaiian navigation. Essentially, the way Hawaiian navigation works, they don't use a compass, no sextant, no modern methods, and nobody on this 62-foot boat is using, they don't have a GPS on the boat with them.
I don't want to be on that boat.
And essentially the way they do it is they've come up with this method of tracking the stars, and that in combination with watching the winds and the waves, they're able to track their direction. So they watch where a star comes up from over the horizon and where it ends in the horizon, and that combined with the direction of the waves can help them guide the boat. And they've been doing this for thousands of years. But they'd been lost. So now they're training a whole new set of people that can do this. And some of the new younger people that talk about it, they say they're not as good as the elders. The elders essentially can go to sleep in the bottom of the boat. And they just know by the way the waves are hitting the boat, if the crew has changed direction. Mm-hmm. They'll get up in the morning and say, you know, hey, I know you changed direction. So
they're taking them back to the roots.
Yeah. So it's really cool. I mean, they've gone amazing distance already. And so I'm going to put the links up there, and you can follow along where they're at. But it's just a really I was amazed at the way the navigation works. So there's a whole link on their website that explains it. I'm not going to go into all the details of it, but it was a great story. It was like reading a novel, just how the traditional mariners had done it. And I've mentioned it on the podcast before. I'm a big fan of Hawaiian culture. We've named all our boats Hawaiian names.
So when I read this, I just got really excited about it. So I can't wait to follow along and see how they do this. But I was just really interested in the navigation method, and I think people will get a kick out of it. So I'll put all the links in the show notes on that one. And the next story I have is another sailing record attempt. I typically don't talk about sail racing, but I do like the around the world races sometimes, just some of the adventure to that and following along some of those. But I also like the people that are just trying to set a record. So an American, Joe Harris, left Newport, Rhode Island this week on November 15th, or last week, and he's trying to break the record for the 40-foot monohull solo nonstop around the world record. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you may have remembered the story that I covered a few podcasts back about the Chinese sailor Guo Chuan, who was working to doing the inside passage above Alaska and setting that record. But he got famous in China for setting this particular record that Joe Harris is trying to beat, the 40-foot monohull nonstop around the world record. So Joe just left this week, and Scuttlebutt Sailing News is doing a really good job of taking his notes that he's sending in, the emails he's sending in, and publishing them. And they're really fun to read. He's a good writer. He's kind of funny. And he talks about when he left, the first 5 days, the wind was between 20 and 45 knots. And so he was sailing really fast. He was doing like 11 to 24 knots and just flying along. And somewhere around the continental shelf, he snagged a lobster pot going 15 knots. And it just essentially stopped the boat dead.
Oh my gosh.
And there was a story on the Scuttlebutt News that just before he left, one of his sailor friends gave him this folding Japanese tree saw that folds all up, but you take it out and it's 20 feet long with a razor sharp blade on the end of it. And he pulled that thing out. Remembered he had it, pulled it out, went over the side of the boat, sawed like twice, and the lobster pot let go. So it was pretty interesting to hear kind of what he's doing. He's already had some accidental jibes, and he's, you know, kind of getting into the sailing. He's had some problems already, but he seems like he's doing good. The other problem he had that I thought was interesting is that his water maker would not make water because the boat was moving too fast. And he never, I guess, didn't test it to realize that that was going to be a problem. And so he, I guess, in chatting with some of his friends back on shore via email, they gave him a fix. They recommended, I guess it's in the racing boats, they have these water ballasts that they use that you can pump water from one side to the other depending on which tack you're on. And so he had some salt water in the leeward tank, and he just ran a hose in there, the tank that's inside the boat, and was able to make water out of that. So figured out a way to do it. But so they're going to have this, and I just think the way he writes is pretty funny, and he's pretty self-deprecating, so it may be something that the listeners want to follow along with and see how he's doing. But the current record, the existing record that Guo Chuan set, is 137 days, 20 hours, 1 minute, and 57 seconds. And it says here that Joe needs to be back in Newport before that time, and in order to do it, he's going to have to average 195 miles a day. That's flying.
Holy crap.
And he's going to have to average approximately 8.2 knots to beat the record. So pretty amazing. And it's when you're out there by yourself and you're just getting beat up going that fast every day, that's perseverance. I got to hand it to these guys there to be able to do that. And the next story is from our legal correspondent. Brandy's going to cover a story because I pulled this one up and it has a legal tinge to it. And since I'm not qualified, she's a court reporter, I'm going to have her read this one.
Yeah, so this is interesting. This makes everybody probably think, oh, we need a warning on all of our sailboats. But this is about a sailboat racer who blames a crewmate for his racing injuries. This is a guy out of Harris County, Texas, who is suing a resident alleging negligence for his injuries that he sustained on a sailboat race. This was a race that they were in. It's called the Icicle Race in Galveston Bay. Back in January 5th, 2013, the crew member, he slipped and fell sustained two injuries to his head and brain during two separate races. The first was when he slipped and fell, and the second was when he hit his head by the sailboat's boom. Yeah, how many of us have been hit by the sailboat's boom? I would be one many, many times. And then it says later in August 26, 2013, this guy was found unconscious on his home floor. He was taken to the hospital where he learned he had subdural hematomas under the skull. Says he didn't realize these incidents even happened or could be part of the sailboat incident until he was discharged from the hospital months following that following month. Saying that the guy who was injured is saying that he is suing because the boat was not providing anti-skid or slip resistant services on the boat. And that he was not warned of the changing of the positions of the sailboat boom and not requiring him to seek medical attention after two incidents at the race. Well, if you think you need medical attention, shouldn't you be able to figure that out for yourself if you get nailed in the head by a boom or you slip and fall?
Yeah.
So he's continuing to endure physical pain and mental pain. And he is suing this gentleman for $500,000. This guy is 56 years old and completely disabled.
What I thought was interesting is the dates in the story. So he was in, and I didn't catch it until you read it. These were two separate races.
Yeah.
This guy's accident prone number one. He fell down and hit his head on one race. And then another race, he got hit by the boom. But these races were around January 5th, 2013. He wasn't found unconscious until August 26, 2013. So it just seems strange that it's that many months later. Was he in a coma on the floor this whole time? It doesn't make any sense. And then all of a sudden now he's completely disabled. I guess I don't know much about hematomas. Maybe it just slowly grew.
I don't know.
But like you said, the lesson of the story is, I guess, when somebody comes to the boat,
with warning labels everywhere,
and you have to make sure they understand that the boom can be dangerous.
But doesn't everybody... Well, I guess no.
Well, I mean, the captain of the boat should always say if you're tacking or something so people can watch out for the boom. But, I mean,
in a race, and you're in a sailing race, you have some idea of how a sailboat works. Mm. You're not just getting on a sailboat and being in a race without realizing, hey, that boom can move at any minute. To be aware, and you're normally not aware when you get whacked in the head by the boom.
Sounds like this guy might have just been... dead weight on the boat where you're just using him for ballast. So he might not know what he was doing on that boat, which then it becomes the captain to watch out for your crew. So I can't, I don't know all the details of the lawsuit, but I just thought it was an interesting story. Hopefully they are able to get it resolved. So the next story I have is about one of the most famous luxury catamaran builders, Gunboat. I think if anybody is followed the luxury performance catamarans in recent years, everybody knows of the Gunboats, the Gunboat 55s, and just an amazing performance and luxury boat, very expensive. Well, unfortunately, last week, Gunboat filed for bankruptcy. Womp so, womp. Yeah, they're having trouble.
I'm sure with it having its sinking episode, yeah, it really dampened their future.
That has something to do with it. So they're filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which is not, they're not going out of business. It gives them a chance to come out of it. But the owner of the company, Peter Johnstone, reports that the decision followed a 2-year period of adverse business circumstances. And he's quoted in the article saying that in a period of nonstop accolades and introduction of several terrific new models, Gunboat has been quietly struggling behind the scenes for nearly 2 years. It's been a perfect storm of adverse business circumstances and mistakes and disputes. And he gives kind of a bullet point of some of them. He said the new Chinese-built Gunboat 60 is... turned out just be a fortune to sort out with this Chinese builder and dealing with contractual obligations and all the rework they were having to do and warranty costs. And then on top of that, the G4, which was their foiling performance catamaran, capsized in a race in April, and that kind of hurt that the sales of that boat, which I don't really understand that one, because that one everybody knew was super high performance and probably had that possibility of happening. And then on top of that, as you said, the abandonment of Rainmaker, the fifth Gunboat 55 that was abandoned on its way to the Caribbean, and as far as I know, still hasn't been found. I think they did find it at one point, but I don't think anybody went and tried to rescue it. But it was pretty tore up by the time they found it. And then they were trying to ramp up production in North Carolina, and that took longer and is higher cost. So the whole situation is just, it's been, you know, really challenging. And he was very honest when he, in this article, he said, as the sole owner of a company, these issues are all mine. He said, I maybe could have overcome one or two of the challenges, but not all of them. There's just no way I could have come out of it. So he filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And if anybody doesn't understand Chapter 11 or the Chapter 13, the difference, Chapter 13 essentially dissolving the company and selling off the assets to pay off your liens. But Chapter 11, it's essentially a structured way of coming out of it. So they essentially, you turn over pretty much the running of the operations and business to the courts, and the judge, a professional, and other people get involved to figure out who you need to first start to pay off and how you can restructure your business operations so that it can stabilize and then slowly build back out of that. So I wouldn't know anything a whole lot about Chapter 11. It's been a long time since business school, but I recently listened to a podcast, which I'm going to put a link to on the Planet Money podcast, which I found really interesting because it went all over about Chapter 11 bankruptcy and why it's one of the most unique business tools we have for business in the United States. That if people can come out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy, it saves jobs, it saves people money, all the suppliers get their money back, you know, all those good things come out of it, and the company survives and can go on and flourish. So he was just very honest in this article, and he said he's, you know, very sorry that this happened. It's just the nature of the business and had a lot of bad things go wrong. So hopefully they'll come out of it. We saw the one at the Miami Boat Show, and it is beautiful, impressive. Though. Very impressive. So that is it for the sailing news, and we'll be right back with our product of the week. Okay, we're back, and we are going to talk about our featured product of the week, and our product this week is the Caframo 747 7-inch DC fan. And this is probably one of the most used items on our boat. It's constantly running when we're on the boat. These are available. We'll see them I'll put the link into our link for the Amazon store. They're $48 on Amazon, and there's an additional clamp that you really should get, which is $11 on top of that. So we're looking at about a $60 fan here.
Yeah, the fan itself, I think, comes with a suction cup, and we just didn't find the suction cup to work very well. Yeah, so we really have the clamp, and it clamps to our companionway steps, and it's great.
Yeah, it's easy to move around and adjust. And at $60, this was a hard one for me to justify when I first bought it, but it has a lot of great reviews online. And the reason we bought it is that we went out originally and bought a cheap automotive fan, I think from Walmart or some automotive store, and that one broke. And then I went out and bought another one, and I think they were probably $10 when I bought them. And that one lasted about 3 trips, and it broke.
Get what you pay for. Yeah.
So we were $20 in and just kept going through these things, and they weren't very efficient either. They eat up the batteries. And so I looked at this one, and there's a couple of things that's really great about it. It doesn't have a guard around the blades, which I guess it could be good or bad. The good thing is the blades are like a soft rubber, so when you run into them, they really don't hurt.
It scares you more than it hurts. But
I probably at least 5 times on every trip.
Oh, yeah. We're constantly, you know, fingers in it, forehead in it.
My forehead and everything else.
It sits above our cooler that we store back by our bed. And then every time we go into the cooler, if the fan's on, you hear us,
It doesn't really hurt. And it doesn't leave a mark.
Again, it just scares you. You realize, shoot, there's a fan there.
But it has these flexible blades. But they're fairly big, and they really do move a lot of air. Yeah. And it has 2 speeds, and we rarely put it on the high speed, but... and it's got a cigarette plug, lighter plug that we use. You can get it hardwired in if you want. It uses really low amperage. So it uses about a third of an amp on the low setting and about a half to three quarters of an amp on the high setting. So
it runs the bulk of the time that we're on the boat. I mean, very seldom do we turn it off unless, you know, if we're in the cockpit sailing and underway, then it's usually off. But if I'm down below cooking lunch or, you know, just hanging out on anchor or something, it's usually always on.
Yeah, we pretty much have it going 24 hours a day. And there's some trips where we'll go 2 days, 3 days without using the generator, just with, you know, running off the battery or when we're running the engine to get it going. So it's great to have that low amperage fan. So we highly recommend this one. Caframo has a lot of different fans, and I'm sure there's great reviews on the other ones. This is just happens to be the one we use.
Ours is the 7-inch.
Yeah, the 747 is the model. It's the one with the flexible blades. It doesn't have most of them have a cover around the blades, and this one's just kind of open. But works great. Just get the extra clamp accessory, and I've got that on the store also. But just easiest thing, if you're having problems with the store, just go in the show notes, and the direct link to go to Amazon is on there. So you just link there, and it'll take you right into Amazon. You can buy it right off of Amazon. So that is it for the product. And want to mention again, we really could use your help to support the podcast. The number one thing you can do to help us is spread the word. So any sailors you know, get out there, tell them about the show, go on one of your online forums, post it out there.
We just grab people's phones and say, hey, see this purple podcast button? Let's look up some sailing stuff. And we put it on there ourselves.
When you see a little number one, you know, come up next to that purple button, listen.
You need to listen.
So, and subscribing really makes a difference. It's part of the iTunes logarithm is how many people subscribe. So, and if you, while you're out there, if you want to put a review out, that's great too. But we've learned that the subscribing really makes a big difference. So please do that and spread the word. And then the other thing is the Patreon site that we've set up. So you'll see it in the show notes, patreon.com/thesailingroad. And we still haven't got our Patreon video set up.
We've just been so busy. Work is kicking my butt, that's for sure, right now. So I think this weekend, we got a long weekend. We got family time on Thursday all day. So I think probably by the weekend, we'll be ready to
throw the boat in the water. And then when we get to the boat show, we'll probably do one on the boat. So we'll get them out there and we'll let people know.
Be patient.
We're going to try to make them fun. So definitely get out there, and if you don't know anything about Patreon, we talked about it in the last show, it's a great way to support the podcast with a dollar a month, even something like that really makes a big difference when you add it up all the listeners that we have.
And so, you get fun little prizes.
Yeah, we've got little rewards out there, and it kind of works. If you plan on doing a dollar a month and just doing it per episode, we do about 3 to 4 episodes a month. So if you're going to do that, you might as well select the $3 or $4 level and just do that once a month, because then you get that level. So that's kind of the way it works. But we'll talk about that more in the videos. But we've got some other cool little awards out there, and you kind of, you know, different ranks of support. We really, really appreciate if anybody could get out there and do that, because it makes a big difference in paying the cost for the podcast and all the time that we spend doing it. And then the Amazon program, want to mention that again. So our Amazon store, we continue to load things out there. I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, if you have items that you really like on the boat, we want to hear about them. We'll add them into that listener recommended session. We've had a couple more people buy things, but I think we're probably at maybe 2 to 3 people a month are buying right now in the Amazon store. So if we just, you know, doubled or tripled that, it would help with a lot of the basic costs. So if you just have something, go out there. Easiest way to do it is just set up a bookmark. You go into the sailingroad.com/Amazon, and once you get in to Amazon, set that up as your bookmark, because you'll look up in the browser bar and you'll see something that links to the Sailing Road up there. It's our little affiliate code that's in the Amazon address. And once you have that, every time you go in through that link, thesailingroad.com/Amazon, or your own personal bookmark, it'll work. We'll get whatever you buy on Amazon. Doesn't have to be sailing related. We'll get a little commission from Amazon. Still costs you the same. But with the Christmas holiday coming up, and as you get into Black Friday purchases this week, go out and look at our Amazon store that's on the website. We've got over 90 items in there that we really recommend.
Yeah, don't forget to send us back your feedback, because like we said, we're going to do the Christmas list. So we want to get some wish lists from our listeners and be able to make this a cool little Christmas list.
Absolutely.
Something.
So that is it for this week. And if you have anything to contact us about, we'd love to hear from you. Just introduce yourself. Tell us what you sail, where you sail, any show ideas, any people that you think would be great for us to interview. Like I said, products that you love, or just to say hello. We just love to hear from you and hear about your sailing experiences.
Yep. And don't forget to visit us on Facebook and Twitter.
And Instagram. We've got Instagram pictures
yep,
out there.
Yep, sorry.
And,
Instagram.
And YouTube. YouTube channel. So thanks for listening, and we hope to see you on the water soon.
See you guys.